You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com.
Bobby Orr, behind the net to Sanderson. Orr! Bobby Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like, it is sure.
Yeah. With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah, he's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him!
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Great Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm gonna get a dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
Welcome into episode 176 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Scott McLaughlin today. No Bridget Prue with us. She's off in vacation land. Scott, I know we're a little bit jealous, although the weather was pretty nice in Boston today. It was about 60 degrees, so not too bad.
Yeah, I would rather be at TD Garden than the Bahamas for sure, all the time. I don't know what the popcorn situation is in the Bahamas. You know, just the unknown scares me. I know I got my popcorn in the press box, so...
Yes, yeah, definitely. That's the Bahamas is not known for their popcorn, that's for sure. But also at the TD Garden, as you mentioned, so the Bruins get their 54th win of the season tonight against the Ottawa Senators, who up until recently were in a dogfight for the wild card spot, but they've dropped out a little bit as of late. We got to look at Jacob Chychrun, their newest acquisition at the deadline, up in Ottawa. Didn't help them win, though. Bruins were able to sneak by with a 2-1 win. Goals from Krejci and Jake DeBrusk. So, yet again, DeBrusk kind of continuing his hot streak, and Marchand gets an assist on that play as well. Bergeron as well, I believe, or maybe Bergeron assists on Krejci's goal. But either way, those guys, they're still scoring. After a bit of a slump these last three games, they've been the difference makers.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's kind of like a combination of a few different things. You know, Marchand a couple weeks ago said he's still not really feeling himself and, you know, wasn't where he expected to be. And he said again tonight, you know, he's still not quite there, but he's feeling better. So I think he's gotten going a bit. DeBrusk, I was talking to him after the game and he sort of said, you know, when he first came back to the lineup, he had like all this energy from missing all this time. And then, like, as he played a few games, it kind of set in that, okay, it's not automatically 100%. Like, okay, there's still some soreness. Like, got to kind of manage it. And then he felt like he hit a little bit of a lull individually, and now he's going again. And so, you know, I think it's like they've all kind of gotten going again together. Inevitable. They're too talented to stay down for too long, even if, you know, Marchand isn't quite prime Brad Marchand. Bergeron's on a little bit or whatever. Like, they're gonna figure it out. They're gonna be effective. You know, in the last podcast I mentioned how they'd given up some goals during that last stretch, which was uncharacteristic. They're clamping it down, which again is like expected that they're going to do that. They're not just going to slip defensively and struggle for more than three or four games like that. They're just too good. I think you saw DeBrusk make a great play in the back check tonight. You saw Bergeron break up some passes in the back check. All three of them part of what the penalty kill is going to look like for a while now with Derek Forbort out, and all three, you know, played a role there. Otto goes over three in the power play. So yeah, they've definitely gotten going, and you know, you want to see them finish the season strong, because obviously, you know, I've said before, like, that the check line is, they've kind of been the most consistent offensive line, but that top line is still going to be the one that's going to, you know, they're going to get a ton of tough matchups, and so you want them feeling good, and I think they've started to feel better these last few games.
Yeah, no, it's vital for this team. I mean, obviously, we've seen that a top line can be shut down over the course of a playoff series. So the benefit for the Bruins this year is that they have, you know, they really have two top lines, and they have about, I mean, the third line is more of a second line, and the fourth line, I guess you could say, is a fourth line. But regardless, they, yes, so that them getting their groove back again, we knew it was inevitable. It was just a matter of when. And would it be with enough time to kind of get their mojo going before the playoffs? And, you know, it's not as easy as it seems, because you have to rest guys and manage minutes. And if you're slumping, it's guys are less prone to be receptive to those things. But now that they've gotten some confidence going, I feel like, you know, they're okay with taking a rest here and there because they're feeling better about their games. You mentioned Derek Forbert out of the lineup. Do you want to give a quick update, Scott, on him? And I think he's out for the regular season, right?
Yeah, Jim Montgomery said at Tuesday's morning skate that they don't anticipate Forbert being back before the end of the regular season, which is kind of the same language they used with Hall and Foligno. And the other injury updates from Tuesday is Taylor Hall was on the ice before morning skate and then stayed on for morning skate in a red no contact jersey. He led the center ice stretch, which is, you know, usually kind of when guys come back from an injury, like, that's, you know, they get that. And Foligno was seen skating on his own. I wasn't there for morning skate Tuesday, but, you know, everyone else who was there, and then what Montgomery said after. So yeah, so Foligno's back on the ice, which is a good sign, because the last time we saw him, you know, at the Garden or around Warrior, he still had a brace on his legs. So, you know, that was during their last homestand before the team's road trip, you know, so basically 2 weeks ago. So two encouraging signs there, but obviously, you know, some disappointing news on Forbert. You know, they still have six regular defensemen who are healthy, and those are the six who played Tuesday night. It, you know, I do think Zboril's going to get some more games. I think they will still rotate defensemen out here and there. So, you know, and now they're going to see what their penalty kill looks like without Forbert, right? Because that was the most noticeable area that his absence showed up earlier this season, when he was out with the broken hand for, you know, almost a month, was their penalty kill clearly dropped off. At the time he got hurt, they're at like 90% as a team, and then it dropped all the way down to 76% with him out. So far, with him out this time, the penalty kill's been really solid these last three games. So, you know, Jim Montgomery highlighted guys like Lindholm and Orlov stepping up, especially in, you know, that left spot on the PK, left defense spot. So I guess it's not a silver lining. That's not the right word, but it's an opportunity now to see, you know, okay, what is your penalty kill without Derek Forbert? Because that stretch, you know, when he was out with the broken hand, that was in November. That was a long time ago. So how, you know, that doesn't really mean a whole lot in March and April. So now you have another chance to figure out, you know, what this group is without him.
Yeah, I mean, they still won't be as good as with him in there. Just, you know, it'd be great if they could make up the difference a little bit. But obviously the optimal situation is that he's back in time for the playoffs. And we don't really know if that's the case, right, because they're being kind of vague about it.
Yeah, it sounds like it'll probably be close, like maybe right on – you know, same kind of timeline as Foligno, where it's like, could be very end of the regular season, could be early in the playoffs type thing. But yeah, they are leaving it pretty vague.
I mean, I think that'd be a pretty big loss for them, quite frankly. I think he's been I know you've mentioned Scott in the past that his his position in the top six defense isn't solidified, and I understand why you would say that, but I really just feel like what he brings to that penalty kill, and I guess we'll see without him right this time around, but just his size and ability to eat shots, I just feel like it's invaluable in the playoffs. Like, that does that mean I'm calling him a Norris caliber player? Yeah, I guess it, no, I'm just kidding. But you know, he brings a very, very vital element to a cup hopeful team, right? And so I think that's a pretty tough loss. And if he is down, somebody else is going to have to sit there and you know, try to embrace that role and eat some shots, because nobody wants to eat shots, and Derek Forbert for some reason loves to do it. So you can't discount that, right? But I guess we'll see how it plays out.
Right. And, you know, the counter could be like, you know, because I wrote about this the other day, or, you know, last week or whatever, when Forbert had kind of just got hurt and we didn't know it was going to be this long. Basically what you were just saying about, you know, who could actually, you know, who will actually be out and all that and what it can look like. And I was curious to see, like, what can the penalty kill do without him? And I wrote it basically the way you just said, like, you know, some, when Forbert's in there, that saves, you know, Lindholm, Orlov, McAvoy from having to step in front of more one timers. And Matt Porter, the Globe, you know, that had like pretty good response, which is doesn't necessarily mean, you know, those guys have to step in front of more one timers. Like, it could be, you know, maybe the penalty kill is closing on plays better with those guys. Maybe you get more clears. Maybe, you know, teams don't have the space to set up one timers as much. Like, you know, Forbert, as great as that is, like, he's not the quickest skater. So maybe he's, you know, at, like, if you were looking for potential advantages of those other guys, like, maybe they just close on plays faster, win pucks back, don't give guys the space to get one timers off. So now there's going to be a long stretch here where we're going to see if that's actually how it plays out. You know, if we get a couple of weeks from now and teams are teeing off on the power play and their penalty kill isn't really holding up, then yeah, it's going to be pretty obvious that they missed Derek Forbert there. If they lock it down and close the regular season really strong on the PK, then I think my case of, you know, their best 5-on-5 D lineup to me probably doesn't have Forbert in it. You know, I think their six best 5-on-5 defenders are McAvoy, Lindholm, Orlov, Grizzlick, Carlo, Clifton. Maybe that becomes, you know, something they might more seriously consider if the penalty kill is able to hold up down the stretch.
I guess time will tell, and I don't disagree with you on that as far as 5-on-5 lineups. But analytically, you are correct. I think objectively, you would say you're correct. So, but I think there's an argument to be had about certain intangibles that don't show up in the analytics, and one being size and the ability to, you know, take those, like we talked about, just those shots that you just don't want a Matt Grizzly taking or a McAvoy or whatever. And I hear Matt Porter's point. That's valid. I still think, you know, shot blocking in the PK is inevitable no matter how much you close, but I hear his point, though.
And, you know, to the other side of it, like, we've talked about this on Sunday Skate, and Razor is strongly in favor. Like, he's like, as a goalie, I want Derek Forbert out there, period. Like, that's, yeah. I want him in the lineup. I want him on the penalty kill. So yeah. That's, you know, that's obviously also a very valuable perspective, is sure. Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman would, you know, probably tell you the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So, Scott, we spoke yesterday for episode 175, and we speak now just after one further game, which is the Ottawa game. So, for me, we touched on DeBrusk and Marchand and Bergeron's, you know, continuing to click, and DeBrusk's, you just see his speed. He looks like he shot through out of a cannon right now, and that's when he's playing his best. And Marchand, he just seems to be much more like himself and whatnot. So that's great. I guess one of the bigger takeaways for me from this game is just really watching Tyler Bertuzzi and see how he's doing. And again, like, I don't think he didn't have any points, but he did have six shots on goal. And that is a sign of somebody who is engaged in pressing and getting opportunities.
Yeah, and he led the team in 5-on-5 shot attempts. He had 8 5-on-5 shot attempts. Yeah, it's like, I feel like I'm saying this after every game now, but you can just tell he's getting more comfortable. He's shooting more. He's being more aggressive. Like, he's not deferring as much, and yet he's also still making those really nice passes to help set up his line mates, his teammates. Yeah, it's, you know, I thought he was involved on the forecheck. He was all around the net. It was like there were multiple times, both with his usual third line and a couple times they dropped him down to the fourth line to take a shift in Lauko's spot. And it was like you would just see, you know, chaos down low, and he's like right in the middle of it, just battling for pucks, you know, poking it free. Like, one time he had just like a clean steal, like just stripped the defender from behind as he started coming out of the corner. Yeah, like this is what you want to see. It's like just that kind of tenacious work ethic that, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you saw this or thought it at all, or but I got like a couple tweets or saw a couple tweets from people, you know, maybe his first week or two, or, you know, his first handful of games, that were like, is it just me, or like does Bertuzzi look kind of like almost disinterested, disengaged at times? And I hadn't, like, I don't think I had really seen that or thought that, but it seemed to be something that like some fans were seeing or wondering. And I think if that thought had crossed your mind, I imagine these last couple of games would have to, you know, have dispelled that. Like, he looks, you know, like you said, very engaged. He's just been very active and involved and in the middle of a lot of good things when he's been on the ice.
Yeah, I think Bruins fans oftentimes feel like when a so-called agitator or pest or bruiser, or, you know, joins the team, that their first game they're supposed to, you know, put somebody through the glass or start face washing. And you've made comments in the past recently about how Bertuzzi is not a major body checker, I guess, per se, which, you know, to be honest with you, I didn't watch Red Wings games all the time. I've seen enough of him to know what kind of player he is, but I actually was surprised to notice that he's not that kind of player. So maybe that's why certain people thought he was disengaged, because he felt like he was probably going to be part of a larger plan in Detroit, and then, you know, goes to Boston and whatnot, and isn't dropping the gloves or whatever. But you know, that's not the case. I mean, he's clearly interested in the behind the beat stuff. You would see that. I just think, you know, it's a lot of change for somebody, and that's all that really is, in my opinion.
Yeah, and not to keep just stealing points that Razor has made on Sunday Skate or during his EI interviews, but I just think like a player's perspective is valuable, where two of those early games were against his former team in Detroit, and like Razor has said, it's like, no matter what, no matter how professional you are, how happy you are to be on your new team or whatever, that's just a weird situation. Like, you're facing guys that you were friends with, that you hung out with every day, that you were teammates with like literally 1 week ago. And, you know, so it's like, no matter how much you try to ignore that once the game starts and play your game and whatever, it's like human nature is like, you know, am I really getting as pissed at this guy as I would at, you know, some other opponent? Like, no, it's like, I was just going to battle that guy like 7 days ago. Like, how, you know, yeah, how much can I really kind of him get on my nerves and me get on his?
Yeah, I mean, there's no greater example of that, Scott, than Adam Banks. You know, I mean, he goes from the Hawks, you know, the Minnesota powerhouse, to the District 5 Ducks. You know, and he's got the starter jacket with the Hawks, and now he's taking slap shots with Fulton Reed and Averman. look, it's tough. It's tough. You know, this is an adjustment period there.
That's right. That's right. That could have been a cautionary tale. You know, we should have been on the lookout for that.
So, all right. So any other takeaways from this game in particular that you wanted to go over before we move on to some more macro storylines?
I mean, just, you know, I thought first two periods, like, the Bruins weren't great. They looked a little off, gave up a lot of shots, 37 shots through the first two periods. And then third period, they, like, completely turned it around, clamped down, only gave up four shots in the third, had a lot of offensive zone time. And it's like, that's, you know, that this game could have been trending towards another game like in Calgary where they just give up a ton of shots. And it's like, well, I guess we're just going to have Linus steal one tonight. And it didn't go down that path. Like, they were able to, as a team, get it on track in the third period and be like, no, no, we're actually going to earn this win. Like, we're not just going to put it all on Ullmark. We can be better. And they were. And, you know, they've now had a few of these really strong third periods recently during this now, you know, four-game winning streak, that, you know, that had been part of, like, the slippage, right? Was whether it was Edmonton or Chicago, like, they seemed to just not have it in the third, ran out of steam, whatever, took it for granted, I don't know, but they have that. They've been the best third period in the team in the NHL all season, so it looks like they kind of have that back now where they're, you know, even in a game where they weren't great the first two periods, they close it out strong.
Yeah, which I guess is a nice sign that they can turn it on when they want to, but it's a cautionary tale about, yeah, you can't rely on that, and you don't want to, if you're not playing the full 60 in the playoffs, it's, you know, chances are you're not going to win the ultimate prize. But yes, I mean, I think, given the circumstance that they're in, where they are in the standings, where it is in the regular season schedule, they're just collecting points any way they can. And yeah, third period's been very strong for them all year. You made mention of Linus Ullmark and his performance today, in particular through the first 40 minutes of play. I'm going to throw it back into your side of the court for just something that you wanted to discuss, about the idea of, you know, potentially using more than one guy in the playoffs, or is, you know, is Swayman really just Ullmark's number two, or is there potential, potentially more at stake between those two this year?
Yeah, I mean, so first, just like start with Ullmark. I feel like there's been some talk recently of like a slump, or, you know, he hasn't looked like himself. And to me, you're really only talking about one, maybe two games. Chicago wasn't good for sure. And then the Minnesota game, I mean, he only gives up two goals that counted. But yes, he did technically give up two others that got called back by video review. But yeah, obviously, even early in tonight's game, I thought, you know, a little bit shaky. You know, the one Ottawa goal wasn't great. He had another, just total misplay where the puck slid off his stick into the slot and he recovered and bailed himself out. But then he just totally locked it down, especially in that second period. He was incredible. And then obviously not tested a ton in the third. But I think it's pretty safe to say they don't win that game without Ullmark being very close to the top of his game. And Swayman, you know, two straight shutouts, his last two starts after his own little mini slump. It's the idea of like potentially rotating them is, you know, I brought this up like a while ago. I think I mentioned on here, I asked Razor about it on the first Sunday skate with, you know, over a month ago. And it's like everyone's approach, Jim Montgomery has been asked about it, said he thought about it, but he doesn't anticipate doing it. And that feels like everyone's response is like, well, you know, it could work. Maybe it's not totally crazy, but and you just don't do it. You know, you everyone settles on one goalie for the playoffs. And all along I've been like, yeah, that's true. Like, I don't expect it to happen. But as I keep watching them, I'm just like, why not though? Like, I get that no one does it, but like, they have historically great goaltending this season, and the overwhelming majority of it has come just by rotating Ullmark and Swayman. And they've both been, Ullmark has been great all year, and Swayman has been great basically since December. If they were two, you know, league average or slightly above average goalies, I'd say like, no, ride whoever's hotter at the time. But because they've just been both been so good, I just kind of keep coming back and like thinking to myself, like, this has worked all year. Is it really that crazy to consider keeping it going in the playoffs? I also think it would like eliminate some headaches around, you know, when would you like say you settle on Ullmark as your starter for the playoffs? What would it take to go to Swayman at some point? You know, usually that's a pretty long leash. We saw Tuukka Rask get a very long leash, even when he was playing with a torn hip labrum. So usually your starter gets a pretty long leash, and it's like, well, if you have a goalie as good as Swayman, does that shorten the leash? Does that, you know, create complications? Like, okay, what if you win a game and Ullmark's okay, not great? Like, would that change it, or does it have to be a legitimately bad game? I kind of feel like if you just have like a pure rotation, you just tell the guys, you know, hey, we're just going to continue what's been working all season. That eliminates a lot of it, and you can basically just ride that until, like, if one of them falters in a rotation, then fine, then you go with the hotter hand. But I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy. And also, I will say, I just saw your college, Merrimack. They've been doing this like the entire second half of the year, including at hockey semifinals and championship this weekend. So, you know, it's happening at other levels. And I do truly believe at some, it's happened a couple times in the NHL, but I do think at some point, like, it's going to become something we see more often. I don't know. Those are just kind of like my rambling thoughts on it, I guess. But I'm increasingly thinking like it really wouldn't be that crazy.
Can you just clarify what the rotation you're speaking of would look like? Are you talking literally every other game, or like every two games? Every other game.
Every other game. Exactly what they've been doing for months.
Yeah. I mean, I personally don't love that, just because I feel like there's a momentum factor in the playoffs that you guys, or not you guys, but like people would be discounting. Like, I feel like so Ullmark goes out there and, you know, stands on his head for a game, or Swayman stands on his head for a game and makes 45 saves, and you're just going to reward him by sticking him on the pine just to have a rotation. And then also I feel like you get to a position where it's like, okay, you go to a game seven, and it's like, I think it's a slippery slope. I think that, and I think it creates a lot of unnecessary, difficult decisions going into a game, into a series. I feel like if a guy is ailing or needs a rest or has had a couple of bad games and you want to change momentum in a series because you only have so much time, I'm all for it. But I don't want to just do a one-on-one-off split just to keep a guy fresh. Like, I'd ride the hot hand. And if the hot hand runs cold, give the other guy a chance. And if he becomes a hot hand, then ride him until he's not. Like, I don't mind giving both guys a net throughout the playoffs, but I don't like the every other game idea. I don't know. And I think it's difficult for the team, right? Like, your defenseman, like, you know, you have communication with your goaltender behind the net all the time, and it's different for each goalie. Obviously the Bruins are comfortable with both guys. I'm just saying I just think it's a little unnecessary. I think you can have, because of their tandem, I feel you can keep them fresh, but not necessarily having to do it with every other game. I'm not saying it couldn't work, but I'm not the biggest fan of that.
Yeah. My thing is like, because what they're doing now in the regular season is working at historically great levels. Like I wrote last week about how their numbers compared to the rest of the league are, you have to go back to the 80s to find a team whose goaltending was this much better than second place in the league or the league average. Because it's working at a historically great level, that's why I would keep it going. Like, because I would sit them down and say, guys, you're both playing great. What we've been doing rotating you has given us incredible goaltending all year. And that's the plan for the playoffs. We're just going to keep going like we have in the regular season. And I actually think that makes decisions between games easier. Like, again, now if you get to a point where, you know, Ullmark's great in game one, Swayman's okay in game two, Ullmark's great in game three, Swayman's okay in game four, like, okay, then I'm fine riding Ullmark the rest of the series. Like, I'm not saying like I'm strictly sticking to it no matter what. If one guy clearly gets hotter than the other, then I'm fine riding him. And if that happens between now and game one, then that could change my mind. But if they're both playing at this level that they've been at for months now, I think like for coaches, I understand like the decision's always going to be tough. But I think like that plan could actually be easier on the goalies themselves and on the players where, you know, again, they don't have to deal with that. Like, yeah, okay. Like if I'm only okay, does that mean I'm getting benched? If I have two tough games, am I out or does it have to be three? You know, like I think those decisions can actually be tougher of knowing like exactly how, like, what is the point where you make a switch? You know, how much slippage does there have to be before you go to Swayman? How, you know, like how do you measure like Ullmark's energy levels if he's wearing down at all? Like that, I think that stuff might be even tougher to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I feel like it's very simple. It's you go down 2-0 in a series, you give the other guy a look. And that's when I make a switch. If that case happens, if that scenario happens, I mean, I'm not going to totally discount the ideology of what you're discussing. And like, if they do that and it works, great. But like, I just, you know, to say that it makes their decision making easier, I would say like you kind of bailed out on that because you were like, but also if they wanted to keep a guy and not stick to it completely, I wouldn't hate that. So you kind of a bailout on your end. Because you can't advocate for the one-on-one off and then be like, but I wouldn't stick to it. So if you're gonna make the argument, I would say like, if they're in an elimination game in game six and goalie A, you know, makes 35, 40 saves, keeps the Bruins alive, you're gonna go to the other guy in game seven just because it's a rotation. So
if he's been really good, yes. Like this scenario, say Ullmark gets game one and you alternate from there, and you know, they've both had really good series, and Swayman just, you know, won in game six and was really good. If Ullmark's been good, then I'm still going back to him in game seven. Like, yeah, that's how it would work for me.
Well, you stick to your guns. I appreciate that. I respect it. I'm all for getting both guys action in the playoffs, but I would agree to disagree. I'm not a huge fan of the one-off scenario. I believe in momentum. I believe in guys getting confidence and riding it game to game. And if a guy flounders for a couple of games, like I said, if the Bruins were to go down 2-0 in a series, no matter who was in net for those two games, they go to the other guy. But I do believe that confidence, especially with goaltenders, and I know Swayman and Ullmark are a special breed this year, and I get what you're saying, and I know. But goaltenders really are a special breed, and they, when they are feeling confident, I just think that like you don't want to take them out of the cage unless you have to. And I really do believe in momentum with goaltenders. I really do. So interesting conversation. I wonder what other people would think. I just really think that there's a major difference between playoffs and regular season. And momentum is a huge part of playoffs. And that extends on a team level and an individual level. But this might be the first time Scott and I have ever had counter opinions on something.
And yeah, and I understand, like, I'm in the very small minority on this because I don't think a lot of people agree with this side. And like I said, I would not be considering it if they weren't achieving historic success with the rotation. It's like that. That's ultimately what it comes back to for me, is like something is working so well that I look at it and I'm like, I don't know. I think I just want to continue doing that. You know, it's like, I would say that about anything. You know, if they had tried, like, say for some reason they had split up Bergeron and Marchand at some point this season, and we're like, yeah, but, you know, we're going to put them back together when it matters. Well, let's say they split them up and their new lines are just cruising along at, like, a, you know, producing at a high level. My take would be like, I don't know, just keep doing what's working. Like, that's...
Are you still going?
Like, no.
Okay. I mean, like, I feel like... Look, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I know this sounds obvious, and I'm not trying to, like, be condescending, but, like, the regular season, you play Philadelphia on a Tuesday, then you play Vegas on a Thursday, then you play the Islanders on a Tuesday. Like, you're playing, yeah, it's easier for that to work when you're playing every single team throughout 82 games, and everybody has different travel schedules, and you're catching certain teams on back-to-backs and other teams after 4 days off, and it's just different. But as a goaltender, I really feel like if you were to poll goaltenders out there, when you're playing the same team over the course of a series, game to game, you're living your opposition's shooting tendencies. You're studying them when you're not playing. I just feel like there's, like, the element of playing the same team multiple times in a series. Like, it's not the regular season. And it's, like I said, it's like, it's one thing to do Swayman against the Islanders and then Allmark versus the Ducks. But if you have, you know, whatever, if you're playing Panarin and the Rangers for seven games, I feel like if you have a goalie who's playing well and he's learning about his opposition every game and their tendencies and whatnot, to stick him on the bench every other game, I just feel like might halt that process. And if they do this, Scott, and you're right, I'll get "Scott was right" tattooed across my ass. But if they're wrong, if you're wrong, then, you know, we'll have to call back to episode 176. But it is a good discussion. I understand what you're saying. I'm not discounting in all that. It's just not my cup of tea. In reality,
I would also, because I was just doing like a little bit of research on this, I believe the possibly the only team, but certainly the last team to win the cup with something that resembled a strict rotation was the Bruins in 1971-72. Jerry Cheevers and Eddie Johnston, they basically just rotated them game by game throughout that entire postseason. The Flyers did it when they got to the Cup Finals in 2010 and lost to Chicago. Brian Boucher and Michael Layton and neither one of those was it like exactly one game for one game for the next, but it was they never got more than like two games in a row. So like sometimes they would go two in a row and then go back to the other guy. So yeah, it's not completely, it's not like it's something that has never ever been done, but it is obviously very rare, and especially rare for a team that actually makes a deep run, which I fully acknowledge, which is why they probably won't do it, because I don't really think they're, especially I think like the influence that goalie Bob has, I think he has been on so many of these deep playoff runs and seen, you know, one goalie take charge, that I can't imagine him really wanting to do this. So I don't think it will happen. But I don't know. I kind of think I'd be open to it.
Hey, well, you know what? You gave us 15 minutes of the pod, so I'm all for it.
So let me ask you then sort of the second part of what's kind of become a topic recently. And I know Jones and Mago have talked about this and, you know, other shows as well. But in your mind, is Swayman at all challenging for that game one start? Or are you locked in on Ullmark no matter what?
Yeah, I think he is challenging for that day one start, or that game one start. Because to give more credibility to the last conversation that we had, and more specifically on your side of the argument, they've both been so dynamite this year that I guess to keep it stupid simple, what I would tell you is whoever is playing the best in the last couple of weeks of the season, the last week of the season, like give them game one. I mean, I guess it's, I don't know. It's tough. Like, because the end of the season, guys could be sitting, but like, I'll put it this way. If Allmark's last couple of starts are not better than Swayman's, yeah, I'd go with Swayman game one. Because I'm not afraid to play both guys in the playoffs. I think both guys are going to play in the playoffs. I just wasn't a fan, and I'm not a fan of the one-on-one-off scenario. But yeah, whoever has the best hand going into the playoffs. And I would say throughout the playoffs too. You know, so
you know, it would be even more unprecedented than my idea would be a goalie winning the Vezina Trophy and the goaltending Triple Crown and not being his team starter for the playoffs.
What have you done for me lately? It's a regular season award.
Yeah,
but okay, but like I hear what you're saying, but Swayman's been phenomenal.
Right, that's the thing is like it's like with all this stuff, like it just speaks to how good their guys have been. Like that's not, if Swayman starts game one, it's a credit to Swayman. It's not like a knock on Allmark, I don't think, unless he like just really sucks the last 2 weeks or something like that, which yeah. I don't foresee, but not yeah, me. it's like the same thing when we're talking about who sits at forward or defense when they're fully healthy. It's like, well, all of these guys are like earning playing time when they're in the lineup. Like, for the most part, everyone who gets in is playing well. So it's not, you know, I don't think guys are going to be losing jobs. It's just there's only so many of them. So guys who deserve to play are going to sit in the playoffs. It's just going to be inevitable with how good and how deep this team is.
Yeah. And by the way, Scott, I don't appreciate you sandbagging me like that, setting me up for failure. no, I mean, look, I mean, I will say, like, I think – yeah, I mean, Allmark would have to let in like 5 goals in like 4 or 5 consecutive games for me to even consider not giving him that game one. But in that hypothetical scenario, it's like, you know, hardware, regular season hardware, if a guy's not playing up to snuff heading into the playoffs, like it's, I mean, thanks for the Vezina, but like now the real season begins. So whoever gives you the best chance to win game one. And if, because, yeah, anyway. So one other thing I wanted to talk about from the game, Scott, somebody wants to bring up in general is Charlie Coyle. Maybe you can give me some thoughts on him this year, because he's got 40 points right now and he's on pace to have his second most productive season in the NHL points wise. I think he had 56 points 1 year in Minnesota, but he's been tasked with a much more defensive responsibility this year for the Bruins. A lot of D zone draws, a lot of time in a penalty kill. And so for him to absorb that new role, that new identity, while still finding a way to put up, you know, 40 to 45, 46 points at year's end, maybe more. If you just had some thoughts on the former Boston University Terrier, Charlie Coyle.
Yeah, I think without question, he's playing the best all around hockey of his career. Like maybe he's played better offensive hockey in the past. You mentioned the 56 points, but this is the best two-way hockey I've seen him play. And I think the defensive improvement, the way he has embraced that more defensive role in penalty killing, you know, basically like in his prime years or like later prime years, you know, kind of almost reinventing his game a little bit, is really impressive. And then just how he's played recently, you know, we talked about like that during that little skid that they had, how many chances, you know, good looks he passed out of. And, you know, I know during one of the games, Nesson, like the Edmonton game, especially, Nesson showed kind of like a compilation of a few of them. And it's like, oh man, like, come on, Charlie, like you have to shoot. And now the last week plus, like, he has been. He's clearly either he realized it himself, which may very well have been the case, or there's just like a meeting with the coaches where it's like, look, you get this look, we need you to shoot. Like, I understand you want to pass, you want to, you know, find the easy tap in, but shoot. And now he is. And just the way he's, you can tell, like, when he's playing confident, because two things stand out. One is how easy it looks for him to protect the puck in the offensive zone, which he's usually really good at no matter what. But then, like, when he's really rolling and, like, feeling his game, you can tell, like, it's, he almost looks like he's toying with guys. And that's how he's looked recently. And then the other is he attacks with speed off the rush, which sometimes can come and go. Like, you know, sometimes they'll maybe slow the play down a little too much, but I feel like you've been seeing more of that as well. And that whole line really, you know, attacking better off the rush. So yeah, he's playing extremely well. And like, this is, you know, I feel like every year when we get to the playoffs, you know, sometimes like we'll do series X factors. And it's like Charlie Coyle is always one of them because we know how important the third line is. You know, we've had this discussion before, like when the Bruins have had really good third lines, they go on deep playoff runs. When they don't have a third line, they lose in the first or second round. Like, it's not quite that simple, but that's a big part of the equation. When he's playing like this, you have a really good third line. So that's crucial. And he's been playing like this the vast majority of the season.
Yeah, and you know, you don't have to look any further than the 2019 playoff run to see exactly what he can mean for the Bruins in the playoffs. I mean, they lost game one to the Maple Leafs that year at home, and then Coyle scored the first goal in game two, and the Bruins kind of came out like gamebusters and got the Bruins on the board. And you know, they obviously they take care of business that game, and we know what he did against Columbus. He had a great, you know, great game one against Columbus, two goals, including the game winner in overtime. And, you know, he had many, many strong games in that playoff run. He had a really, really, really strong finals too. So yeah, he's a very important guy for them going forward. And it's good to see him just really evolving. And as you mentioned, reshaping his game, taking pride in what the Bruins have asked him to do, because, it's just, yeah, it's just the evolution of a player, which is great. And last thing for me, Scott, before we take off, and you may have a few other things, I'm not sure, but just if you mind giving a quick update on Nick Foligno and Hall. I know you mentioned off the top that they were skating, but if, you know, if there's any rumblings around the ninth floor about, you know, certain timelines, and you know, you mentioned Taylor Hall was in the red practice jersey after before morning skate, and then during morning skate, he put the red practice non-contact jersey on. And in the past this year, when guys do that, you've obviously kind of had this little Scott McLaughlin timetable where it's like, once they have the red non-contact jersey in practice, it's like a week before they have the contact jersey, and it's like on a week. I don't know if you still think that applies to this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it can differ by guy. I think the next things to watch with Hall is they have a full team practice on Wednesday. Is he out for that in the no contact jersey? Because morning skate's one thing, like, you know, they don't really go very hard at morning skates. They're not very, very long. So like, even like, if you go back to the beginning of the season, Brad Marchand was taking part in some morning skates before he was ready to practice with the team, just because that they're lighter and he could do it. So now let's see if Taylor Hall practices with the team, you know, an actual practice, which they have on Wednesday. That will be interesting. And then the next step after that is get out of the no contact jersey. And then the final step, as we've seen this year, of like when a guy's going to play in a game, is they're doing regular drills with a line, you know, like they have a clear spot in the lineup. So, you know, whenever you see Taylor Hall in a no contact jersey taking drills with Charlie Coyle, and whether it's Trent Frederick or Tyler Bertuzzi, that means he's about to play in a game. So, you know, I think it, with him already on the ice now for a morning skate, like, I would be shocked if he's not back before the end of the regular season. Like, that's, you know, they've, what, 3 full weeks before the regular season's over. Doesn't seem like it would be that long of a buildup from where he is now. you know, Foligno, Emily Kaplan of ESPN, you know, we're going back a couple of weeks, you know, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks now. But her report was that it was looking like 6 weeks out from the injury, which put it right at end of the regular season, start of the playoffs. So I haven't seen or heard anything that would, you know, change that timeline. So I guess I would say I'm still expecting that. Hall had been on the ice skating on his own for about a week before joining them for morning skate today. So it's possible maybe, you know, sometime next week we see Foligno out there with the team. Like it's, and then that kind of gets, you know, that same clock started. So getting closer, the most important thing is they're clearly making progress. So in Hall, it would seem like is closer. And at this point, I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't get at least a few regular season games in once he returns.
So what does that mean for the salary cap for the Bruins? Like, what's the difference between both guys coming back in the regular season versus like maybe Foligno comes back in the postseason? Like, what's the cap flexibility Sweden's gonna have to do to get these guys both back, or is after the deadline it's just kind of like it's what it is?
Well, I think someone is gonna have to be out until the playoffs starts, but that now includes Forbert in that conversation as well. So I think someone has to be on long-term IR until the playoffs. You know, Hall obviously looks like the closest to returning, and he's the one who is actually on long-term IR right now. So there could still be another LTIR move coming where he gets activated off and either Foligno or Forbert goes on. But don't take that for 100%. I believe that's how it has to work, but I am not 1000% sure on that.
Well, that's perfect. That's honestly kind of the note I wanted to leave this podcast on. So, yeah.
we kind of sort of know what we're talking about.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about before we sign off?
No, I don't think so.
All right, perfect. Because you can't really top that last take. So, I'm honestly, I'm sorry to the listeners for even asking that. I'm embarrassed on behalf of the Skate Pod that we couldn't give a finite answer, but you know what? Look, we're speculators. We're not mathematicians. No, we don't pretend to know all the answers, Scott.
Nope.
So, all right. Well, you know what though? What I can tell you is, for the first time in like 17 years, the Canadians are coming to the Garden. So that'll be fun.
It's true. Yeah.
Next game is Montreal versus Boston on Thursday, and we will talk after that game as well. So that will be episode 177. So, Scott, if you have nothing else, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you later this week.